Prague attracted thousands of young Westerners in the Wild East days of the early 1990s. Many were English teachers, but some had far more interesting jobs, like Dom Jolly, who is Ian Willoughby's guest in this edition of One on One.
Today, a successful travel writer, Dom Jolly is perhaps best known for the hidden camera comedy show Trigger Happy TV, an enormous hit in the early 2000s. But a decade or so before that, he spent an eventful year here in Prague, working as a diplomat with the European Commission when Czechoslovakia was going through a period of major change in the early 1990s. Jolly, who's now in his early 50s, discussed his time in the city, an experience that he clearly looks back on with true fondness, in a Skype interview from his home in the UK. You came to Prague in your early to mid-20s. What had you been doing prior to that?
Well, I'd left university. I'd gone to live in Paris for a year, and I'd come back and I'd got a job at MTV. And I was really excited. I thought, oh, telly, music, it's going to be great. And I was a runner at MTV, literally making sandwiches. And I'd forgotten that when I was at university, I'd applied to be an intern for the European Commission, I assumed, in Brussels. And then one day I was in the kitchen in MTV in Camden in London, about to make a toastie for Headbangers Ball. And I get a call and there's this woman saying, hi, is that Dom Jolly? I said, yeah. She said, this is Susan Beresford. And I'm ringing from the Commission in Prague, the Commission's delegation in Prague. And we've got your thing and you've got through. And when will you be joining us? And I was like, what? Prague? What? So basically this form I'd filled out to go and work in Brussels had kind of wound its way through the bureaucratic corridors of Brussels. And for some weird reason, maybe because I spoke languages, they decided that I would do an internship in Prague. So I thought, great. So I went downstairs and resigned from MTV. And they said, oh, have you got another job? I go, yep, I'm off to be a diplomat in Prague, which was a first for them. And then I had a very naff white Golf GTI convertible. So I just got in that with my girlfriend and drove across Europe and came to Prague. And I was one of the few convertibles in Prague at the time.
What exactly were you doing? What was your day-to-day job?
Basically, the European Commission had set up delegations in three or four of the recently liberated or decommunisted Warsaw Pact countries. So they had one in Budapest, and I think they had one in Warsaw, and they certainly had one in Prague. And the idea was, it was the European Commission's delegation where I think they try and help with things like FARA and various aid programs. And they were all, I think, doing a really good job. I turned up, I had no idea what I was supposed to be doing. There'd clearly been some terrible mix-up. I think they thought I'd done European studies at the LSE. I'd actually done Arabic and politics at SOAS. And I turned up there and I was given an office. And I'll be honest with you, I sat for 7 months and I have very little idea what I was supposed to be doing there. If someone came and really had a big problem, I'd nod and then I'd say I'll refer that back to Brussels, but I didn't. So I kind of apologized for that. They never told me what I was supposed to be doing. I was an intern. But on the plus side, I think I did a great PR job for Prague because I've written about it a lot. I fell just massively in love with Czechoslovakia and Prague in particular. And it was just an incredibly special time to be there. It was really weird. I remember the first thing that really hit me when I got into Prague was, firstly, as I was arrived driving in, there were all those buildings, apartment blocks, and I was thinking, my God, this place is hideous. I can't live here. And then suddenly I came through and you got that view across the Charles Bridge looking up to the castle and thinking, oh my God, this place is just, it's incredible. And the first thing I noticed was there was no advertising. It was really weird. Obviously, like every city you go to has got advertising. And it was almost the lack of advertising that hit me. It was like having silence. And it was only after a while I realized that's what was weird. And it was in this very odd hiatus time where, you know, Václav Klaus hadn't taken over. And it really was still a kind of an almost idyllic period, really. I mean, it was never going to last, but I was late for a meeting. I had a German who was in charge of me, and he was very good, called Gerhard. And he sent me to a meeting at the Ministry of Culture. And he said, I'll meet you there. And we went to the Ministry of Culture. I remember it had these weird lifts with no doors. They were like open boxes going up and down. And I went in, sat in the ante room, waiting for Gerhard. And I was ushered into the room with the minister. I was like, no, like, I'm an idiot. Like, Gerhard's not here. They said, well, you know, he's ready. So I go in, and it was quite a sort of Bond baddie type room, you know, no carpets, just a desk, this young guy sitting there. And he sat down, he said, Mr. Jolly, nice to see you, blah, blah, blah. He started talking and I don't get nervous, but I just thought, this is ridiculous. I got the giggles. I started laughing And he said, what's the issue here? I said, I'm really sorry. I'm going to come clean with you. I go, but just, you know, my boss isn't here. I've no idea what I'm doing. 3 months ago, I was making sandwiches at MTV. And now I'm here talking to the Minister of Culture in Czechoslovakia. He said, oh, don't worry about it. He goes, a year ago, I was a playwright and now I'm the minister. So it was kind of that feel that I loved about it. You know, and Frank Zappa and Lou Reed were sort of vague cultural attachés. And there was just something, in fact, the very word bohemian, there was something just sort of pure and bohemian for a place. It was the one thing I really remember is I've been to a lot of places and every time you got somewhere, you'd be enjoying it. And some guy would go, you just arrived, have you? And you go, yeah. And they go, if you'd been here 3 years ago, that's when it was really cool. And what I loved about that Prague moment when I got to Prague, it's the only time in my life I thought I am here in the right place at the right time. Like, this is the moment to be here. It was incredible.
Was there much of a kind of whiff of the Cold War still when you arrived in Prague?
I mean, Prague just has a whiff of the Cold War anyway about it. Prague is, you know, as you obviously know and everyone knows, it just looked like a film set from every spy film you'd ever seen. And I arrived in winter, you know, and you crossed the Charles Bridge and there was mist and corners and people huddled. And it was just everything felt like you were just straight off the set of Harry's Game or whatever. But yeah, there was this thing of Cold War as well. I mean, because, you know, I'm obsessed with politics and the whole political situation was so interesting anyway. I just couldn't stop thinking about stuff. I had this stamp, weirdly, that someone had sent me years ago, and I'd had it on my wall with a collection of other stuff. And it was Hitler looking out from the castle down over Prague. And all those sort of things were very weird coming to Prague and realizing you were standing in the footsteps of famous photographs that you'd seen. You know, I mean, the water tower, the where the people looked into Václav Havel's flat, I was obsessed with. I thought that was really interesting. The very famous cafe on that side.
Slavia, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that to me was, I just couldn't imagine what weird sort of encounters had gone on in those days. It was one of the most evocative cities I've ever been to in that way. And then Wenceslas Square itself, you know, very so famous for the actual scene when everyone's jangling their keys and when the Russians came in, stuff happened there. So everywhere I went in that city, I don't think I've ever been more blown away by a city. In other cities, I've had great preconceptions and they didn't live up to it. I just didn't know enough about Prague. I really didn't know about it. So it's very rare you go somewhere with almost zero knowledge and get so, so blown away by a place.
Well, Prague in those days had a reputation as being a really wild place. You were a young guy in your 20s. What kind of stuff were you getting up to outside of your work?
Well, I mean, there wasn't much work. It was out all the time. I used to go to a place, there was a place called Joe's Bar. I mean, normally, the first thing I'd do would be to completely ignore anywhere that's, you know, if I lived in Paris, there was a place called Violon Dang, which was full of American students. Like, there's no way I'd go to that. But weirdly, Joe's Bar, even though it was run by Americans, kind of felt quite authentic. It was one of the very first bars opened up. And that was that was the centerpiece in Malostrana. And I'd kind of hang there a lot. And then from there, go off to various places. I had an amazing evening. I went to a place called Bunker. And as far as I know, Bunker was the original Politburo's or one of the Politburo's nuclear bunkers. And it had been turned in glorious Czech style into a nightclub, which I thought was great. And I remember going there and beer was, you know, 8p a pint. And I went there to see the Velvet Underground. Now, unfortunately, not the sort of what you'd call the definitive lineup of the Velvet Underground. This was Mo Tucker and Sterling Morrison. But still, you know, you're thinking, I'm in Prague, you know, Velvet Underground, the links with Lou Reed and Václav Havel. I'm in Bunker. I'm in a Politburo place. I'm drinking beer for it. It doesn't get better than this. So I watched it and it was a great gig. And at the end, Mo Tucker goes, we'd like to thank you all very much. And obviously we have very special links with Prague. And we'd particularly like to thank a man who supported us and we've supported Václav Havel. And they point and I look to my left and there's Václav Havel in this kind of dilapidated black bomber jacket. He's the president or whatever he was at the time. And he's just in the mosh pit standing there. I literally just stood there speechless. I was like, you couldn't have had a more perfect Prague evening. And I was like, no one would ever believe that story. But it happened. It was crazy.
When you were there, was that already the time of all the young American writers, the so-called left bank of the 90s, all that stuff with an American poet or several in every cafe?
Because I'd spent a year in Paris, you know, everyone going to Paris is still desperately trying to cling on to that sort of left-wing bohemian thing. And, you know, That left Paris 40 years ago. That's just gone. I speak fluent French. I love the French, but Parisians are wankers. I'm sorry. And it was a horrible place to live. So when I came to Prague, I didn't expect that. But actually, when I got to Prague, I think Prague felt like what I imagined that amazing period in Paris felt like. It felt bohemian. It felt like artists were in charge briefly. And yes, every cafe had the man scratching his goatee, often with a pipe, you know, which was a very affected thing. You know, this was pre-iPhones, obviously, so a notepad, and they'd just be sipping a beer or a Becherovka or something, normally a Becherovka just to be poncy, and then just looking out and then just scribbling something. And literally, I knew they probably just said, I'm so lonely. But so I did the same thing. That's how I started meeting people in Prague. I'd go down and I'd sit at bars and I'd have, you know, a pack of fags, but no lighter, so I could ask people for a light. I'd have a notebook so I didn't look like a loser. I'd have a Penguin Classic of some sort just lounging on it. And yeah, I became one of those, even grew a little goatee, but I loved it. It was honestly magical.
You mentioned the Mo Tucker Show. Were there any other gigs, memorable gigs? I know you're really into music that you went to.
Who else did I see?
Nick Cave seemed to be here like every year.
Oh, I did see Nick Cave. You're quite right. He was an early one who came. Yes, I did see Nick Cave. I saw a couple of Czech bands that weren't too bad, and I remember buying their CDs to try and look very alternative when I got back. I didn't actually go to that many gigs when I was there. There weren't a vast amount in that first year. It was still so new. I can't think. I just drank a lot, I think, as far as I remember. 2003, I did a show called Dom Jolly's Happy Hour. And in that, I was investigating alcohol around the world. And in that, I went back to Prague and I went to some of my old haunts. I went to a place called Velryba. I used to love that place. That had a sort of massive mirror above the bar and you could sit and people watch subtly in the mirror. And by then I was writing, so I'd go and spy on people there.
A few years later, of course, you started working in TV comedy. You had a huge hit with Trigger Happy TV, a show based on pranking people. From what you're saying, you probably didn't do much of anything in your work, but in your work, did you ever do anything prankish or of that nature?
No, it wasn't prank. I was just behaving like an idiot. I think I was obsessed with driving my car across the Charles Bridge, which is not a prank. It was something I wanted to do. And I did once get nearly across and got arrested. And then I had to claim, the only time I ever did it, diplomatic immunity, because I did have diplomatic immunity, which was insane. But they looked at me and just couldn't believe it, and quite rightly so. And they made me go up to the delegation, which was up near the castle. And the poor guy who was at reception of the delegation, I was sort of brought in by the scruff of my neck. And they were like, is this idiot with you? And they went, sadly. So they had to let me go. So not really pranking in that way, no.
And how come you left Prague? Was it simply that you were on a short-term contract?
Well, my contract was for 9 months. When it finished, I stayed on for another three. I stayed for a total of a year, basically. I didn't have a job at that stage, and I'd saved up enough money from working at the commission. So I just bummed around for a couple of months, and I drove all around the country going to weird places. And then, yeah, I think it was time to go home and try and start my life, really.
You seem so positive about your experience here. Was there anything, though, that you didn't enjoy about living here?
The pollution was bad. I really remember that. There were days when, because I lived slightly above by the castle, as you dip down into the sort of bowl of the city, there were days where they were doing every other, I think it was other odd number plates or whatever. You could only go in one day on, one day off. And it's the first time I'd lived somewhere where I actually felt affected by pollution. You could sort of see it. You'd descend into the smog. It was very LA-ish, but it was really thick. And actually, that was one of the problems that I found early on in Prague, was that there were very few places that the food was, you know, I love my smažené šír, you know, my fried cheese and chips and stuff as much as the next man. But there was a bit of a time where I was like, you know what, I need something healthy. And there was one Icelandic restaurant right in the middle of town. This Icelandic restaurant saved me because it did a lot of fish and it did just simple stuff like smoked salmon and stuff. So occasionally after the heavy Czech food, I needed to detox a bit. And actually, I found this book when I was there. I think it was called something like How to Live Healthily in Prague or Healthy Prague. It was like the first concept of Eco Prague. And one of the things it told me about were these amazing people that owned horses about half an hour outside of Prague. So to kind of de-stress, I used to get out and I'd go riding all day, which was amazing. But no, honestly, I have very, very few negative. I mean, my only negative memories of Prague were just, I kind of feel embarrassed that I didn't do anything to really help. But to be honest, I was never going to. I'm just not made like that. But I've spent my entire life being a sort of cultural ambassador for Prague. And much as it's been occasionally ruined by stag party invasions and stuff, it's one of the most magical places I've ever been.
Well, it sounds like you're a bit like me in that I feel simply privileged to have been in this city in the early 1990s at this amazing time of change.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I love going back to Prague now is I look at young people sitting in bars having a great time, and I sidle up to them and I go, enjoying it? And they go, yeah, love it. I go, should have been here in 91. Wow, those were the days. So I've become that old bastard that does that sort of stuff. And the other thing I regret is that actually there were Czech lessons in the delegation, which I sort of took. And Czech is the most extraordinary language in the sense that it's probably the most useless language in the world to travel in the rest of the world. Like, you never meet a Czech speaker. But I once bumped into Jana Novotná at Wimbledon, and I impressed her with my Bohužel Nerozumím Česky, which was pretty much my only line.